It's 2A Memoir Jim Arism Seattle, 2025, July 22, 2021. Met Claire. I went to Carroll College in Helena, MT, and there I got a huge crush on this girl from Twin Falls, ID, and it turned out we both knew the same colleagues, and had lunch often. She was fun to hang out and party with, but she was seeing another guy who thuggish, so I stayed away, but made my interest known. At our end of the year dance, her boyfriend got in a fight and threw someone through a plate glass wall. The school kicked him out, so he was not there the next year. When we got back to school from summer break, we went to a drive-in theater with a big group of friends. We saw Jurassic Park and something else. It was a double feature. We were sitting next to each other in the back of our friend's VW bus. She asked me, "Do you have a girlfriend?" I did, but I said, "No." "Do you have a boyfriend?" And she said no. We immediately and simultaneously went in for each other and made out through the second movie. All of our friends were there, and saw it coming, so didn't trip or anything. We were locked in tight. Nothing but beer, weed, hacky sack, music, parties, and her cheesy soap operas after that. I started to like Days of Our Lives, and lots of pull and prey on protected sex. I don't know how we did so well in school. I had a 3.85 at graduation, and she had at least a 3.5. I guess we did study a lot together too, while listening to music, but that memory doesn't stand out as much. Had children. We couldn't get enough of each other. Her favorite position was on top. It's hard to pull out when you're on the bottom. In the heat of climax, she'd misheard my safety word. "Get off, I'm about to." And our son was conceived. Neither of us were ready for this. My mind jumped straight to abortion. She quickly convinced me otherwise. After all, we were both raised Catholic. We met at a Catholic college. I should have known better. In my mind, adoption was the next best option, but it wasn't my decision. She decided to keep the pregnancy and the baby, and gave me an all-in or all-out ultimatum. I chose all-in, and 2 years later we married, after a trial period of living together with a child. I didn't want to get married, but was convinced that if I didn't, I wouldn't see my son again. We decided to have another kid because we both wanted our son to have a sibling, and they could keep each other entertained. Nothing to do with how we were getting along as husband and wife. Her dreams and demands were to be a stay-at-home mom. I wanted her to use her degree and help with the finances. We fought about it a lot. Worked. I managed my finances enough to purchase our first home, and things got worse. I got a new job at Hewlett-Packard after a colleague heavily vouched for me during the interviews. The job was extremely harder than I thought it'd be. I went from a job where I knew everything to where I knew nothing, and the learning curve was a sheer upward cliff. This triggered extreme worry over losing my job and losing everything, that I'd let my family down and we'd be homeless in the streets. Depression took over and I could not concentrate at work. When I came home, my wife would nag me for her boredom and how hard it was to care for the kids alone. She'd also nag me for my lack of effort around the home. Apparently I was supposed to do as much or more housework while I was away at work. My favorite time of the day was driving between home and work, because I was alone without the nagging of my wife or my job. And it was so hard being secluded from my family and friend support system in Seattle. My wife hated my family and hated Seattle. Unfortunately, the love for my children was overshadowed by my wife's seemingly constant disdain for me and the constant stress at work of not knowing what I was doing. Suicide. I attempted suicide by cutting my wrist very deep and letting myself bleed into a small creek, crying till death do us part. I threw giant rocks in the air and caught them with my head. I was waiting for a train, so I could lay my head on the tracks. A rainbow appeared. I remembered my kids. I pictured my daughter as a tiny bird in the mouth of a Tyrannosaurus Rex, and if I didn't help raise her, then it would eat her. I got better for my kids. I was in the hospital for a long time. It was painful. Suicide watch rooms have nothing in them and you have to ask to go to the bathroom. The nurses and doctors were mean. They judged me for attempting suicide with two little kids in the world. They didn't understand the tunnel vision of suicide when you have deep depression. Psychiatric hospitals. Inside the Boise Intermountain Psychiatric Hospital, there was a general practitioner who took care of patients' physical wounds. I told him my wrist hurt, the one that I'd self-mutilated, and that the stitches didn't feel right. He put a small band-aid over my deep-stitched, gnarly red and pink cut. It looked infected, and said, "There you go. All fixed." Then called the nurse over to join in on the joke. "See Sally, he's all fixed up," and they laughed. It's prevalent in all mental hospitals. The staff tease the patients for their sadistic entertainment. In contrast, Copenhagen Psychiatric only had nice nurses and doctors. One of the nurses in Copenhagen Psychiatric had a lime green headphone cord that led to her Walkman that glowed bright orange. I followed the cord up to her face. It glowed too, like the face of God, like she was too beautiful to register. She was just rockin' to tunes, smiling, and giving me meds that worked without major, mind-numbing side effects. Marriage denouement. After I got out of the nightmare hospital of Boise, though, I went back home with my wife and kids. It was wonderful to be around my kids again. It was all the light I needed, though it was still dark with the medication rendering me a zombie. They had me on like too many milligrams of Depakote. I just laid on the couch all day and watched TV. I watched cartoons with the kids in the morning. I watched soap operas with my wife during the day. I watched movies at night. I was still massively unhappy and anxious about work and being able to sustain the family we'd started. It was still a lot of ruminating pressure. The meds they gave me were only intended to chill me the fuck out, not make me happy. This mess went on for a few months. Things began to get better. I just did my best at work and apparently that was enough, or they were being soft on me out of pity. I was feeling relatively better and planned a trip to visit my family back in Seattle. My wife did not have a good opinion of my family. She did not like Seattle either. We had fought about that before we moved to Boise from Helena. I wanted to move back to Seattle like I'd planned, and she wanted to move back to Twin Falls, Idaho near her mom. She got violent that night and threw a glass at my head. I ducked. We compromised on Boise. I was going to miss parts of Helena, but I didn't know that then. And not like I missed the Olympics and the sound. All doped up on psychiatric meds, I began to feel sorry for my wife. I was seriously not in a good way, even though I felt relatively better. I was slow. I was quiet. It took effort to play with the kids, but I didn't really engage in anything. It's one of those things when you're depressed, and you do things just because you know it's good to do them, even though enjoyment is difficult because you have dark thoughts constantly going on in the back of your mind. Thoughts that make you anxious and depressed. I still played, and got moments of happiness when we'd make each other laugh. But my wife and I had stopped trying. I low-key wished something would happen to trigger a no-brainer divorce. I almost wanted her to cheat on me because I was not in a good way and I knew it. Then she did cheat on me with her friend's husband. It hurt even when I thought it wouldn't, but was relieved she moved on and would be that more agreeable in divorce. Divorced the day we were supposed to fly to Seattle. Something I'd been looking forward to a long time. I came home from work to find an empty house and a note saying I took the kids to my mom's in Twin Falls. I immediately called and we spoke on the phone. She said to come to Twin Falls to be with her mom, to prove I loved her. I said I wanted a divorce and I left back to Seattle to see my family. I didn't love her anymore, just my kids. I needed my support system. When I flew back to Boise, a lawyer handed me divorce papers as I walked off the plane. We were done. She got a restraining order and I couldn't go within a mile of her, my kids, or my house. I was homeless, and her dad was an Ada County, Boise, cop. Marriage regret. Ever since I've felt guilty for the marriage part of my life saga, but not too guilty. It takes two to tango. We were young in love before finding out we were pregnant. We were so occupied with school and partying, that we didn't get to know each other as much as we should before having a child together for the rest of our lives. I told myself I never wanted to do that to a girl again though, get all depressed and messed and suicidal, giving her PTSD in the process, making a girl I once loved suffer like that because I'm not good at communicating and setting boundaries, I'm not good at fighting. She was not a nice person as a result of my behavior. We were different people. When my son was born we both transformed. I feel like it was ultimately my fault though, I still do. I didn't want to marry her, but I asked anyway. My dad twisted my arm a bit by giving me my grandma's wedding ring to propose with, but it was ultimately my decision, and I deeply regret it. We're now annulled, as we were raised Catholic, so I could marry in the Catholic Church again if I wanted to, but not after all of that, so I guess I'm a priest now. Light girl disrupts writing. Something just happened here at home regarding light girl. I was having a cup of coffee and cigarette on my deck. I left my coffee outside for the next time I have a cigarette. I came in and started writing this to you, and organizing some old computer parts. I was switching between the two tasks when I noticed the Keurig just finished making another cup of coffee, that I don't remember making because I didn't need one. She does this when she visits. I used to think she was a ghost, but I think she can subtly make me do things without thinking about it, like make a cup of coffee that I don't remember making. I'm not at the point of talking to her in my head, but this is the kind of thing that happens when she is around, and more than likely is behind why I keep looking at my phone to see angel numbers like 1111, 111, 222, 333, 444, 555. No shit. I think I have one of each from the last few months. I have screenshots. It usually happens when thinking about or getting a notification from a love interest. Like girl likes to tease me this way when she's around, playing with me while waiting for her higher purpose to take shape. Reflection that light girl is a blessing. Light girl is a curse and a blessing. A curse because she's synonymous with mania, in most people's minds including my own. But the truth is, I think about her all the time, even when I'm stable. I just have sense to not talk about her so much. She is more of a blessing to me. When my mind recognizes it took a right path, she's frequently there. Positive coincidences happen, where she'll leave her mark. She gives me hope, assures me I'll be warm in death someday when she meets me on the other side. She's with me in my darkest depression when I won't let anyone else in. When I lay in bed 24/7 and force myself to sleep because I'd rather be dead, she gives me little signs that comfort. I pray to her. I pray in my own way. July 26, 2021. 2004 trigger to sum up so far. The millennia started with an attempted suicide, moved into divorce, then I moved back to be with my support system in Seattle. In 2001 was hired by Microsoft to write automated tests for the Windows operating system. The day I found out about the job, I was in Bellevue, and the Nisqually earthquake hit. My ex-wife wanted full custody. She was afraid of me around our kids, and did not trust me alone with them, only because I attempted suicide. So she said, I was not abusive in any stretch of the imagination, and she knew that. She admitted that I was a good father, but the side of me she saw throughout my depression, along with the brutal thing I did to myself, she could not get over. But there was more. She was bitter at me, bitter for interrupting her life, I think. She had a new husband in a couple months' time, then a new baby soon thereafter. Every attempt I made to communicate or visit with my kids was a fight for nearly the next 2 decades. We would get into fights over pickup, drop-off, supervised visits, scheduled phone calls, etc. I did not understand her desire to rid me from their lives, despite the suicide attempt, but I did not completely underestimate it. I knew she would make life hell if we ever divorced. It was one of the many reasons I wanted to end it, but I didn't know she would make my kids' lives hell as well by talking about and comparing my son to their crazy father, and putting the kibosh on our visits. That is what got me. Missing visits with my kids, the thing that made my suicide attempt fail, the reason I turned myself back in, I had escaped the hospital to do it, was because I did not want them to be raised without me in their lives. I did not want my ex-wife and her ex-husband to be their only influence because I did not respect them. It was the whole reason I lived and wanted to live again, and of course I loved them more than anything. It's easy to forget that when you're in a deep depression. When you're in deep depression you get tunnel vision that focuses on ending it, like a black hole of thought. Their mom, her husband, and I hated each other. Her husband would spank them, when my ex and I had hardly ever done. I took her to court over it, but there was nothing I could do in Idaho without photos of bruises, pretty much. After I did that though, the gloves really came off, and she cut off all contact with my kids. Phone calls and visits were blocked, even though it went against our custody agreement. I had just dropped a lot of money on a lawyer for the spanking, and was not in a position to take her back to court for contempt, for going against her custody agreement. My only option was to take good records of events, and wait until I could retain another lawyer. The exact moment this was going on, my grandfather died and my last girlfriend broke up with me for acting weird. My second major manic episode was building. My mind couldn't handle the heartbreak, loss, and helplessness all at once, and resulted in the most horrible and vivid manic episode I had in 2004. Ever since that breakup, I've not dated, really, as I don't want to start a relationship bound for marriage again. I still want to date for sex and conversation, but don't want to let anyone into thinking I was husband material. For this conundrum, I stopped pursuing conventional relationships, exclusively dated independent escorts. Often I find women I really click with. I didn't expect to find anything like that. So, I book more time just for hanging out after sex. Escorts can be great, empathetic listeners. We have a lot of fun and conversation, then go home and on with our other lives. It works well for all of us. And that's how I've dated since this last girlfriend. 2004, Jesse, broke up with me. July 27th, 2021. 2004 Juanita Light Girl in a small, woodsy community just north of Kirkland, WA is Juanita. Back in 2004 the mental health institution in Juanita admitted a new patient. I don't even know the exact reason I was sent there. I cannot remember what I had done, and I think my family may have convinced a judge to commit me. That time, I recall yelling on the phone at work so loud that my manager had to settle me down. I was yelling at Vaughn, my kid's stepdad. I was saying some rude ass shit like, "You're so full of shit I can smell you through the phone," and everyone near my office could hear me through the walls. We were discussing his use of corporal punishment on my children. Other than that, I just remember bits and pieces about being in the hospital, and not really what led to it. It's been 17 years. I used to know every step of the way, in my defense, but I guess I've let go, and my subconscious is keeping painful memories of embarrassment away. I've healed, but there's a scar in my memory. Mark, just now I recalled something. I was renting a room from my friend, whom I'd known since high school. This is 10 plus years after. We were in college together as well when I'd met my wife Claire, and I yelled some crazy shit when I thought he wasn't home. Something about him too. I'd also let a frog loose in his house, buried a tinfoil wrapped rat in his backyard, and took a crap in the garden. We had been good friends for over a decade, but he bailed on me as a friend after that. Jesse and my girlfriend Jesse, the last real one I've had, broke up with me. I recall the phone call. "Jim, you're talking weird stuff about colors and shit. I think we should take a break." I was at my sister's house atop the basement stairs, and my family was downstairs. I tried hard to convince my girlfriend to stay, and that everything was fine. I'd mentioned coming to Spokane to talk to her about everything. I thought we were in love, and that seeing each other in person would fix everything. We could realign. "Don't fucking come to Spokane," was her response, followed by an ended connection on my flip phone. Rachel and Juanita. I had met a girl named Rachel from Friday Harbor. She had short black hair, about my height, 5'7", and kind blue eyes. I don't recall any conversations, but we hung out and talked a lot. When the hospital let us out for smoke breaks, we would chill with a larger group of the cool patients who went out for smoke breaks. We'd philosophize and theorize all sorts of shit. Most of us were coming down from mania, but we still liked talking about the secrets we'd found in the universe. When all of our thoughts coincided, it got really exciting. It was quite uncanny. Rachel and I continued such discussions just sitting on the floor in the hospital hallway, because we couldn't go in each other's rooms. She got permission from her boyfriend to be my hospital girlfriend. I still laugh about that, and it was really special to me at the time. One special evening we'd fashioned a Ouija board out of paper, and used someone's hoop earring as a planchette. It was Rachel, I, and a couple older ladies. As we played, one of the older ladies advised my daughter to take the Rainbow Road, as I was expressing all sorts of concern for my children. I never learned what that meant. After Rachel had checked out, I was alone. Not completely alone. There were still cool patients to share thoughts with, like Tony Deluxio, whom I still talk to every 5 years or so. Linus. One afternoon though, I was sitting in the back of the common room on a bench all alone. There were patients scattered across the room, looking a little crazy. I wouldn't want to hang out with any of us really, although we were great for conversation if you'd been up recently. Then in walks a beautiful, short, sharp and prim woman from admittance. She was the most beautiful girl I've seen, in person or otherwise. So beautiful her face is blurred in my memory because my mind could not register how beautiful I thought she was. My mind plays tricks when she's around. My memory sees this most beautiful girl in a lime green prom dress. It was so out of place. Everyone else was in their pajamas pretty much. I'm the only one that remembers it that way. She did that. That's what that light girl wanted me to see. She lit up a depressing, gray hospital day with a lime green prom dress in my mind. My friend Tony Deluxio corrected me 5 years ago. He said he didn't remember a prom dress, but a security blanket, and that we referred to her as Linus. When Linus walked in the back entrance with a group of men in black suits, she had to pick a spot to sit down. Out of all the crazy people in the psychiatric ward, and all the couches and open spaces to sit down alone, she walked over to me without pause or hesitation and gently sat next to me like a feather and said, "I'll sit by you, okay?" I just said okay. I didn't feel the need to say anything because it felt like we were already communicating. We sat there in sheer content. Her presence put me at such ease. I gathered she was being sexually abused by the men that brought her in, and tried to kill herself. I also gathered her favorite hiding place was a small closet shaped like a hallway closet I once had. That was the first and only time I've seen Light Girl. She's my guardian angel. That was the only time I've seen her, and have always hoped to again. August 3, 2021. Spokane. I was finally released from Fairfax Mental Hospital in Juanita, though my heart was with Linus, Light Girl. Now, I wanted to patch things up with my ex-girlfriend Jessie. I could show her that I was okay now. I was sure she'd understand. So I bought a one-way ticket to Spokane, and would call her when I reached Spokane. Hello Jessie, guess where I am? At the Red Lion in downtown Spokane. Care to meet for 4:20 a.m. and talk about my current stable condition? I'm ready to get back together. How about you? Grave mistake, the universe responded. At the airport it began. Everyone was out to get me. I was their entertainment. No one talked to me at the airport. Not even a glance or smile. But I could hear everyone loud and clear in my thoughts. I had tuned into telepathic wave that allowed me to focus in on anything anyone was saying in their head. Thoughts, words, etc. However, this power was a double-edged sword. Because they could read my thoughts as well. This became a game to them. The game was, guess what the crazy, desperate loser is going to do next? I'd go to a vending machine, for example, to pick a treat. While I did, everyone placed bets on what I would get, then cheer or boo loudly depending on what I actually chose. This led me to a dangerous habit, the fake out. I didn't want them to win their dumb bets, so I would move randomly and sporadically to fuck up their prediction. For example, I'd say pick candy C4 in my mind, and direct my finger towards that button, but would press the one below it, or close my eyes and pick one at random. Eye closing was a great way to throw those fuck sticks off. Eye closing while walking backwards was even more powerful. You were invisible, but even more powerfully you could teleport. I never mastered this, but it once happened by accident. I was walking backwards around downtown Spokane with my eye shut to leave an awkward situation in public. I did it for a long time. I walked at least 100 feet backwards with my eyes closed. When I opened them I was in a completely different place, not in downtown Spokane, but somewhere on the outskirts. A police car came down the flat country road and pulled up next to me, with my eyes open walking backwards. They asked if I knew where I was, then proceeded to tell me I was in District 7. I had no idea what they were talking about. Perhaps their jurisdiction? I still don't know. 7 is a pretty significant number, so you know I was tripping a little about it. They ended up giving me a ride back to my hotel. There are some good cops out there, ones who have seen a thing or two, and have the sense to give someone a break. All said, I probably walked 20 miles around downtown and the outskirts of Spokane, just following signs that could lead me to Linus, or on one of her missions, a black and white orb mission. At one point, for no apparent reason, she instructed me to bury some ice I found in Beauty Bark. I did not know what that meant either, but she said the fucksticks would be really bummed about it, so I was game to oblige. I keep forgetting to ask a witch what it means. The witches I'd met in a Copenhagen cemetery 12 years later probably would have known. All along the 20-mile journey I encountered many obstacles of fear and anger, not much laughter, besides the dark humor in my thoughts that I shared with Linus. I also pictured my children with me, and their encouraging words. Yeah dad, go for it, nice one dad. At one point I hitched a ride from a large mid-30s redneck lady and her witch-looking frail friend. They had a pit bull riding with them in the front seat. They let it poke its head and bark at me while we drove around. They were upset because I didn't know where I was going. The dog was frightening as fuck. Linus just said to relax. Nothing will happen. They're just mirages of evil. Kind of like in The Shining. And it will be over soon, my dear. We'll be together for real soon. I told them to let me out, and they obliged. August 8, 2021. Wheelchair man. Next thing I knew the sun was out and the streets were bright. I could barely look around as the sun's rays pierced my night-adjusted eyes. I'd woken up from a deep black nap of witches and pit bulls, but I don't recall sleeping. I recall trying to get comfortable. I climbed to the bottom of the deepest Spokane scatterpark bowl, put a backpack over my head for warmth, and went to sleep. Or so I thought. The moment I closed my eyes the prior night it was like a blink. When they opened again from less than a second of being closed, there were four kids sitting on one of the decks of the bowl, with their legs draped over the edge. Well, one didn't have his legs draped over the edge because he was in a wheelchair, and he didn't speak. He spoke very loudly telepathically, however, and we began not speaking, but vibing each other telepathically with energy. Good vibes. Vibes that sounded a meeting destined to take place. I came across the wheelchair man. The wheelchair man had a message for me. However, his brain was so powerful, there was no way mine could process it all. He shot a sizable amount of it in a giant brainwave push. He told a story filled with vibrant still images that spoke far more than 1,000 words. They came incredibly fast and intricate, but it was information I was to pass on at a later time in efforts to save the world. The wheelchair man knew so much, but had to pass it on because there was nothing he could do about it. He knew about the importance of my father's work on the Voyager satellite and my stepfather's work on the nuclear submarine, one that could reach the farthest reaches of space and another that can stealthily and intelligently destroy any craft in the ocean. I was to pass on the information to my father's, and proceed to devise a plan to somehow avoid the inevitable. The implications of what the wheelchair man needed to say was massive. After the wheelchair man began to tell me what he needed to say, we discussed the first brain dump, and the wheelchair man's friends joined the verbal conversation, speaking for the wheelchair man. I asked if that was all he needed to tell me. He responded it was only the tip of the iceberg of what information he had, and he said that verbally, when I thought he could not speak, he just couldn't speak well. It's the tip of the iceberg. I had no idea what I just learned from him, but I caught bits and pieces of things I'd already learned along my journey, that good and evil would have to cooperate in order to save the universe. Chinese soup that very day, as the sun's rays burned my eyes, that wasn't the only thing burning me. People were staring. They were everywhere. Fucksticks. They look good on the outside, but extremely judgmental, narcissistic, and evil with ill will on the inside. They toy with human emotion and response. They're the ones that bet on my every move in the airport. They're the witch and her dog in the car I hitched a ride from. They're the ones that want to burn me over an open grill in their log cabin. I was surrounded by a massive amount, and scared of them. I picked up the pace and took shelter from the crowd. Although not all of them are evil, there is a way to ward off the evil ones. A telepathic voice in my head announced, "Go to that Chinese restaurant over there, and order some soup. After you eat the Chinese soup, then in daylight you will appear as the most grotesque, offensive, and fearful thing in the world to the fucksticks, and to normal folks, allies. You will appear as your normal self, though cleaned up a bit." I had just walked 20 miles. The Chinese restaurant was a simple little hole in the wall, where apparently all they had was soup, and there were 4 old Chinese women in the front of the restaurant sipping their soup. I sat down and ordered a bowl. The staff was kind, polite, and prompt. I had my soup in the next moment, and it tasted like all my favorite hints of Chinese food flavor wrapped into a single spoonful. Sip by sip it went down in just a few minutes. I was more than sated. I paid the kind old lady and parted out the door. As I stepped back into the street from the Chinese restaurant, the outdoors had changed. The sun was brighter, and the buildings were cleaner. I was in an old part of the city. Before I'd entered the Chinese restaurant, the buildings were of a classic style, but worn down, dirty, and tired with broken windows and cracked walls. Now they were vibrant and new, as if I'd stepped back in time and was seeing the buildings the day after construction was completed. The city was new, and sparkled in the brightest sun I've seen. January 6, 2025 and February 6, 2025 after a 4-year riding hiatus. Glowing orange, she entered through the back door of the common room with a group of 5 men in black suits. They must have come through the back fence of the hospital grounds to be discreet. I have never seen anyone else come through that way. Just outside that door, but within the fence of the hospital grounds, was the patient smoking area, where psychotic smokers shared grandiose conspiracies and played paying pong. Visitors didn't go to the smoking area, especially a pack of large black-suited men with one small, young woman, and no one was smoking when they came in. Perhaps they entered from the main entrance earlier, but I would have noticed them. I would have noticed her alone without looking. Her aura electrified the room. Her stunning appearance put me in shock. I couldn't move nor speak when she came to sit next to me, yet every cell in my body was vibrating. So badly I was seeing things. I remembered her wearing a lime green prom dress, but my hospital friend said it was just a light green security blanket. We called her Linus, he says. I've seen her twice. Once that night, and once after my physical body split into 2 12 years after sitting next to Linus, I saw the med nurse at Copenhagen Psychiatric with the glowing orange Walkman. The lime green headphone cord is what caught my attention. Her face so stunning it blurred my vision. Same soul, different girl. I call that nurse Key Lime. I call the soul Light Girl. Psychotica. When I was in Fairfax Mental Institution in 2004, I saw the most striking girl, around 5 feet 5, green eyes, thin frame, sandy blonde, small chest, about 23 years old, and wearing a lime green prom dress. She walked in from admittance, probably just attempted suicide, and looked weary of everyone in the place. She sat by me and said, "I guess I'll just sit by you, okay?" Her voice was high-pitched yet velvet-toned. There wasn't much of any dialogue between us because I was too shy. All I said was okay. We just sat there, content with each other's presence. The next day she was gone, which was unusual because people don't usually leave those places the day after they're admitted. Maybe she was an angel, got transferred, or succeeded in her suicide. I chose to think she was an angel, and have spent many a mania looking for her. Light girl. When manic, I don't hear voices, I absorb thoughts. And in the height of my mania, light girl's thoughts become one with mine. She's not a ghost or imaginary friend. We share my body. Sometimes her voice echoes from my lips, and sometimes she smiles with a gnashing grin. She protects me from mental harm. When I think of my ex-wife, she'll snap, "Fuck that bitch." When I'm uncomfortable with a situation, she'll advise to get the fuck out. When light girl does not possess me, I search for her human form. I literally search for the girl in the lime green prom dress. This has gotten me into a great deal of trouble. Once upon a time, trouble began at a skateboard park. I was skating some simple lines in a skateboard park, when suddenly I felt as if all the skaters could hear the songs playing in my head. They would follow me around and make requests. I could absorb their thoughts as if they were requesting songs from a DJ. Then one of them actually spoke, "God Save the Queen." At that moment I looked up and the sun was speaking to through its rays. Light girl, my queen, was near, and if I followed signs closely, I could find her manifestation. More prominent rays shone on a house across the lawn from the park I was skating in. I thought, that's it, that's where she is. So I walked over and knocked on the door, only to find an angry neighbor exclaiming, "Who the hell are you, and get the hell out of here." I continued walking, following the sun's rays all over town, and into the outskirts. I probably walked 20 miles in a manic tizzy trying to find my angel. When night fell, I found myself back at the skate park, too tired to walk any further. I took a nap in the bottom of a bowl in the park with a black attaché case over my head for warmth. Once I awoke, I abandoned my search and decided to check into the Red Lion Hotel for some rest and relaxation, only to find, in fact, I was hot on the trail. The girl at the Red Lion check-in counter had an incredibly familiar chemistry about her, as if light girl's soul had penetrated her body. She was a tad heavier than the girl in the lime green prom dress, but I knew it was her, just wrapped in a different body. The conversation was light, but our eye contact and body language was locked tight. At one point I absorbed a thought from her loud and clear that said, "I want to see that picture of you and your beautiful children." Without even thinking about it, I pulled out a recent church picture of my children and me. She exclaimed, "Not the picture," looked around, to ensure no one noticed this exchange, and threw another thought saying, "I need your ID." I gave her my ID, and got a room key in return. I'd expected to run into the same girl that night. Maybe she'd come knocking on my door, but I was terribly wrong. I turned around and saw the back of a very tall man staring out the front door. He was wearing a dark brown suit and top hat, and holding a dark black, neon black, briefcase. His presence made me shudder and shrink. I just stared at the back of him for a time, transfixed. He didn't move nor make a noise. I sensed he was waiting for me to do something, and was there to assist in some way. Afraid he'd turn around to face me, I sped up the elevator and up to my room. His presence followed me. However, I left his body in the lobby, but the tall man, as I call him, had some sort of metaphysical grip on my mind. As I opened the door to my room on the fifth floor, the tall man spoke, in thought absorption, "Have some coffee." Sure enough, a hot cup of coffee was sitting next to the TV waiting for me. I picked it up and started to sip. It was a very dark roast, my favorite, and made me feel right at home. I sat down and watched TV for a while, then went into the bathroom. The tub was full of water. The surface of the water did not look normal. It was covered in a silky substance and riddled with tiny bubbles. The tall man told me, thought absorption again, that light girl's soul was in the bath water, and that I needed to immerse myself, swallow some, and then split my body in two to be with her. He was there to assist with the splitting process, and all I needed to do was follow his instruction. So I got in the bath water. It was freezing cold. I looked closely at the water. There were millions of tiny particles swimming about in different directions. I went underwater to completely immerse myself. My body chilled from the cold and tickled from her soul. I raised my head, hesitated, but then took a sip. Immediately I felt the possession of her soul in my body. It was warm, comforting, and her thoughts were again one with mine. My body was no longer cold. We were one again. I discovered Light Girl did in fact succeed in her suicide, and was now with me from the afterlife. Her purpose was to come back to life to be with me, and my body was to be the host of her newly formed body, which would be exactly like her old one. The tall man was there to help with the splitting process that would create the newly formed body. Now that I'd drank the coffee, some magic blend, and swallowed Light Girl's soul, I was ready to take part in some human mitosis. The tall man instructed us to remove everything from the bed but the bottom sheet, and then told us to lie face down on the sheet. With my hands cupping my groin, I began breathing heavily into the sheet and excreting all the saliva and mucus I could muster up, as if my body had done this before. After about 10 minutes of heavy breathing, my face was just blowing bubbles in a puddle of spit and snot. This isn't working, I thought. Then had Light Girl take over the breathing. I surrendered my body mechanics to her soul. She took a deep breath, and then exhaled into the pillow with cheeks full. I felt my nose sink into the sheet through the pool of pus, splitting into two and parting either way as it descended. The splitting process was not painful, just extremely bizarre. It was like body parts I never knew I had were regaining consciousness from numbness, and growing. Next, I simultaneously noticed my lips splitting two mouths as my hands separated, covering opposite sexual organs. Suddenly two hearts were beating. All this while breathing heavily into the pillow like clockwork, with progression of the split synchronized with every exhale. Suddenly realizing I had four arms and four legs flapping under two faces, I spoke, "Are you okay?" And she, now my other face, responded, "Yeah." Just then a clock tower bell tolled outside. It was midnight. Part of me wanted to see my reflection in the mirror. The other part was scared to death of that reflection. The tall man warned, "This is more critical than surgery. The only thing keeping you animate is the sheet. That is, until the process is complete. Get up from this position, and you will become a dead mound of flesh." He then continued, "To complete the splitting process you need to suffocate yourself in the pillow, so the lungs can be properly divided." I didn't want to die. I'd attempted suicide once several years before, and could not do it again. This got me to thinking there must be a better way. I beseeched the tall man to find another way. Perhaps there were aliens out there who could complete the process without my having to die. Just then a low hum sounded above the Red Lion Hotel, and my body entered complete numbness and was being pulled upward. To his reluctance, the tall man had summoned help from another world. Suddenly my body was one again. I lifted myself up as my skin reluctantly pulled itself away from the clammy sheet. Pieces of flesh were scattered across the bed, and, to my chagrin, a pile of dried up cow dung. The aliens helped complete the split without my having to die, but not without payment. They took my Light Girl. Following, for the first and only time in my life, I checked myself into a mental institution. The end. I didn't see Linus again because she succeeded in her suicide after our encounter at Fairfax Psychiatric Hospital. God's mysterious ways of working led me to split my body into two, and give Linus soul a new body, a second chance for a happier life, I'd hoped would be with me. Why we were separated after literally splitting apart in 2004 has yet to be revealed completely. She was taken to another planet after our splitting, I think, so we wouldn't attract too much attention. Our brain was once one, now split apart. Our two brains are entangled across vast space and dimension. Her thoughts, movements, and actions mirror mine. In the same proximity our being might appear strange. We might also cause unforeseen damage like in 2006. When we telepathically co-formed a psychokinetic jolt across the planet. But my intuition tells me a med nurse at Copenhagen Psychiatric was actually Linus after our splitting. Her orange Walkman had a lime green headphone cord. Lime green is the key to Light Girl. The Walkman and headphone cord appeared glowing and fuzzy when everything else was focused, except her face. Her face had a fuzzy glow to it as well, making it unrecognizable. Her aural vibes were comforting, warm, passionate, and put me to ultimate ease. The care I received from that hospital in general was next level, and I think Light Girl had everything to do with that, as Key Lime. As I telepathized with Light Girl, she was right in front of me as Key Lime. Perhaps her Walkman was intended to prevent any verbal dialogue between us. Perhaps telepathy is her preferred way of communicating, or just a way to prevent us from appearing strange together. We were acting independently of each other and our actions weren't mirrored otherwise. My old blog entries where she's mentioned are hard to read. In the past I've thrown them away, but shouldn't have. Now I keep them in a manic box per psychotherapeutic advice. It's hard to hold on to writing that's painful to read. I literally get a headache after a while trying to follow the logic of my psychosis. There is logic in there somewhere. I know this because at the time of psychosis, everything was crystal clear to me at that moment. The thing to understand is that my mind is going a million miles an hour on multiple tracks at the height of mania, but the tracks are all linear and frequently intersecting. Racing thoughts. Not only racing thoughts, but quick thoughts. I believe my best quips come from when I am in a manic psychosis. The writing is thick and puzzling to my stable self. To make things harder, I intersperse the writing with Light Girl. To me, she's holding the pen. She has her own voice and it's hard to follow the conversations we have on paper or blog. I went to Copenhagen a second time because I had such a good experience the first time. And it wasn't manic spontaneity. I'd been saving for the trip ever since I came home from the first. I wanted to skate in more parks like Haderslev Street Dome, and reconnect with friends I'd met. En route to Copenhagen I had a layover in Amsterdam. During the layover I was able to get cell coverage in the terminal. One message was from an old friend, who was threatening to hunt me down. Before I left Seattle I'd given his ex-wife and kid safe harbor in my home for a few days. He was after her with a gun. In his messages he'd threatened me as well, that he was going to hunt me down with his gun. Who did he know in Copenhagen? I panicked. Now literally anyone could be out to get me. And like Spokane, I was in an airport terminal when I got the call. This is what tipped me into the manic psychosis leading me to Copenhagen psychiatric under Key Lime's care. My friend's threat brought great anger and paranoia. He knew a lot of people in my life. In past episodes, this was my fifth I'd suspected him of co-conspiring to get back at me, for whatever reason, by staging an entire hospital or public place, just to fuck with me. Then he would bet on my reaction or just live stream the suffering for my enemies to enjoy. I heard his voice in the secure area of a hospital once. He didn't work there, but I could hear him down the hall chatting up the nurse and bragging about his Bluetooth headphones. I was laying down in bed in a dark room. Another time I heard him behind me while strapped to a gurney. Seeing a texted death threat from this particular friend was a major trigger. If he's willing to gun me down, who does he know in Copenhagen willing to fuck with me on a massive scale? I had an idea. Fear, stress and anger factors at work were also building up prior to my departure to Copenhagen. I'd recently found a job at Brown Paper Tickets after being fired at Starbucks, and was desperate to make my mark and not lose my job again. A past colleague had handpicked and vouched me for the role, and was the team leader. But our general manager overshadowed everyone and I did not get along with her. She was cocky and micromanaged. I was a bit depressed because there was nothing I could do. I needed this job. This depression led to dark thoughts and a grand conspiracy seated in my brain. Now with my gun-happy friend at the tip of the iceberg, I believed our government was strong-arming Denmark into incinerating dead bodies of trafficked humans from abroad. Human trafficking was on the forefront of my mind as I'd just learned one of my friends was held against her will into sex slavery. I wondered if others around me were going through the same or similar. I derived that there are probably more people I know, but don't suspect their plight, whether it be sex or something else against their will. This extrapolated into the thought that anyone I see in public is potentially trafficked. I imagined people in cages in well-hidden places, used for purposes that deteriorated their health, and ultimately became expendable and killed, afterwards shipped and burned in Danish smokestacks by the strong arm of our trafficking government, riddled with sadism and greed. The trafficking network shipped living humans and human remains in naval port shipping containers. Before going to Copenhagen I saw some of these containers in the alleyway behind Westwood Village Shopping Center. In the same shopping center I was smoking on a bench outside of Starbucks, where I heard tapping on a pipe that came from underneath the building. As I was frequently in Westwood Village at the witching hour on survival smoking missions, I'd investigated where the tapping was coming from. During this investigation, where I first gave myself the codename Jackal, I heard taps from within the containers in the alleyway like I'd heard from the pipe. They weren't loud taps. They were faint taps as if the person was drugged and using their last bit of energy to tap, too weak to pound loud enough on the thick metal container. In Jackal's investigation, supplemented by Light Girl's telepathic insight, the tapping was coming from living humans first trapped by the trafficking network. They were captured in the shopping center stores. The store's metal security shutters would close to the outside world so nothing could be seen inside. Before the people inside could notice and panic, the floors would hydraulically lower underground, where open shipping containers lined the walls within an underground tunnel network to the Seattle port. As the shoppers were forced into the containers, their screams were silenced by the ground overhead. They were packed in like sardines. It wasn't until Copenhagen that Jackal came upon a shipping container of freshly killed and dismembered body parts in a locked shipping container. On the other side of that trafficking network, my trip to Copenhagen became a mission to expose and eradicate this machine. As the anti-hero codenamed Jackal alongside Light Girl, also known as Key Lime, the Danish princess had intelligence regarding the conspiracy, and was herself a victim of our brutal government. She communicated this intelligence to Key Lime. Key Lime led Jackal accordingly. Jackal knew how to hide in the shadows and be unnoticed well. When you think everyone is out to get you, you learn tricks to avoid them. This suited Key Lime's use for Jackal as investigator and reconnaissance agent perfectly. It's hard to distinguish paranoia and delusion from reality, but they do intersect with sensories outside of the mind. Synchronicities in nature, like a car driving over a sewer drain, a bus horn, a person coughing, someone laughing, a light changing green, a bird chirping, a dog barking, a black cat meowing, right as Jackal thinks, says, or does the right thing in purpose of Key Lime's command. They are direct signs from Key Lime to Jackal, an acknowledgement to supplement their ongoing telepathic and possessive communication. 2022, notes from Navis Psychiatric Hospital, Princess Agate, it's early LG, Key Lime, but thank you for waking me up anyway. I'm sure there is something I gotta see at 420 a.m. Last night's slumber was another good one. I'm now averaging 6 hours of sleep instead of 3, which is a really good sign. I must say I am amazed and excited about the new hospital girl. She's smarter than any American woman I've met, and understands a lot more about my plight. I am so tired of these bendy pens. I could write a lot more if they weren't such a pain in the ass. I have nothing exciting to report, aside from some weird shit I learned from Gen Z last night. Apparently, the cool thing to do these days is get eaten by a monster so that you can live in their land. A deathly frightening waking dream in my mind. With nightmares like that, there is no room for dreams. She, Gen Z, had a photocopy color print of a mad red lady, Alistair, actually, and is male, holding a shower of sharp red bloody teeth. She, he wanted to go through, illegible, so she, he, could get to a magical place that was even more disturbing than hell. Disturbia. It's disturbia to think our youth are fantasizing about hell after Earth, because it seems more comfortable than the hell they're already living in, enslaved by abusive Christians, and thus forms a new purpose for the Jackal adventures. Kids, we will find you before you need to escape the hell you are in before having to make the dive into the furry cartoon hell. Disturbia. The Jackal sees a rose. The Jackal's rose glitters lime green around the edges and never dies. The petals themselves are lime green as well, and their vibrance overcomes anything in the region of their frame, brighter than a ghost street light in the witching hour. The LG, Key Lime, rose dominates night and day, and Jackal never takes it for granted. The LG, Key Lime, rose trains Jackal and shows him where to navigate and filter batshit to find lonely, lost souls desperate to be released, and finds them quite often. The LG, Key Lime, rose is currently blossoming from tears down from the crying souls of women and children everywhere. There are no men on Earth, only women and children. Grow up, male children, or at least pretend. The Jackal began his life in the streets of Copenhagen, Denmark, near the 711 and subway station on Princess Agate. The area is a hot international bed, as it is one of the first stops you come to if you grab an M train from the airport to downtown. The Jackal's favorite spot here is among the cobblestone pigeon hangout, where pigeons can easily be thrown into a feeding frenzy. Jackal gets excitement over throwing grips of crumbs for the pigeons. Just down the street from that M station is the Jack's home base, Wonderland. Wonderland, yes, Alice's Wonderland, is an easy place for Jackal to blend in to find allies, and keep foes close. An intersection of international hippies, Christiania is the only public place in Denmark where you can openly sell and use hash among the masses. There are a few homegrown restaurants, bars, stages, farmers market booths there as well. The nightlight gets pretty, and is where the Jackal's first mission began. Coincidentally, this is the first place the Jackal saw his princess in the flesh, having beers and buds with her friends. Jackal and the princess locked eyes that night. Dear Jackal, the world is amiss, and we don't know where to start. Please use your jackal ways, and make much fine-tuned art with your enormous heart. My dear princess, says Jackal, please chill and don't worry a hair on your dome. I've been on this case since I left home to tour your beautiful country. My host is a skateboard enthusiast, and will venture anywhere his steel trucks can take him. Your smokestacks are burning more than just trash. Your smokestacks have been hijacked by human evil, and I swear on my life we'll get the bottom of it for you, my perfectly prim princess. I love you. I love your country. I love humans. Salt water, air and rain rejuvenate the skin. I am your jackal, so all you have to do is let me in. Dear princess, how fair you are. Nothing twinkles brighter than your star. This planet, I'm sure LG, Key Lime, meant for you. And her planet is my planet too. There are still so many rocks to overturn, many tides to sift, and much silt to weed. Doing these things as your steed is a thrill. A buck-o-five here and there for tips will easily do the trick. Lay down, fairest of the fair, and just keep your secrets alive. My current interests, I've not been able to see yet, are the histories of your dragon-like steeples. They burned down in 2024, and what those giant gold balls actually do for the palace. My first report comes from the most beautiful cemetery I've seen in my life. Hans and Bohr are holding the fort down where my wife and I laid and played one day. Not that day, but another night I was prowling the nearby streets until I hit a section that had no shadow barrier. Shadow barriers. Jackal loves shadow barriers. A shadow barrier on a well-lit street hides the jackal from all. Cars, bikers, walkers, skaters, bladers, humans too scared to stare into the dark. At witching hour in downtown Copenhagen, Jackal was riding his cruiser board when suddenly a negative vibe pulled Jackal into a tangent. There was music in the air at 3:30 a.m. that Jackal recognized. However, Jackal should not have heard the song playing from some random apartment window. It was a song that Jackal owned all rights to, and had not released. At that moment Jackal heard bike tires racing down the same empty street he was cruising down on his skateboard. The combination of that song coming from the apartment windows, and racing bike, was enough to force the jackal into his mission. A piece of plywood wall on the right side of the street was loose. Jackal peeled it back to find a broken open chain-linked fence he could sneak under and seek shelter in the underbrush, and rested and waited for the sun to rise. A small slumber was all the jackal needed. He awoke once and scared away a biker taking a piss, then ventured out from under the brush, into the most beautiful cemetery he'd seen in his life. We saw a whale, is what she said. Good news from God is what I heard. Whenever she spoke, I tried my hardest to listen to each and every syllable, even when it irritated and broke my concentration on something. I tried hard to be cool with disturbances, big drunken disturbances, too, because everything out of her mouth turned to diamonds in my ears. She didn't only have my back, she is my spine. I will love her forever and I never would have found her if I wasn't your jackal. Dear princess, the cemetery was quite a whale itself. My princess, it wasn't just a cemetery, it was a place of warmth and love, like a picnicking playground. People would just chill there, having lunch with dead they'd never even known. Jackal took a quick piss, said some prayers, got on his cruiser, and went to work. Now princess, I don't know whom this tombstone belonged to, but it was in a perfect position for the jackal's favorite, unique and original trick. The punk rock, the time was 4:20 and Jackal began his trick on that tombstone, over and over. It was a little difficult because there was a 6-inch gap of grass between the path and the tombstone, but Jackal made it work beautifully, so beautiful that I believe even the tombstone resident himself appreciated it. Ear crack was the noise it made. Until this day I thought I was avenging your bloodline, dear princess, but really, I think I just built us another alley for what was yet to come. We saw a whale, they pretty much said to me, being a 200-pound 44-yo skater doing punk rocks on a gnarly tombstone. Instantly I knew the two dark female onlookers were vampiresses, and they offered me a beer and a conversation, which I most humbly accepted. They were letting me skate, and they said to continue punk rocking the tomb all I wanted. So I did. I don't recall how many more times, then got distracted by their beauty and the rest of the cemetery as the sun rose. Come to fucking think of it, LG, Key Lime, I already knew those girls, I think, from the Paris trip, from the hipster bum in front of Notre Dame. Whence the gold lions of Paris gave me a whippin' I'll never forget. Shiny cheek to cheek they sat just outside front and center of old, undamaged Notre Dame, filed perfectly side to side and laughing in harmony. Those girls have always followed me, LG, Key Lime, and Rose. I assume I don't speak French, you don't like English, but our hearts dance. January 22nd, 2025 and January 24, 2025. I can't quite recall all the missions Jackal went on in Copenhagen until he surrendered to Danish authorities and was taken to Copenhagen Psychiatric Hospital. Ultimately, Jackal was performing ballet nude, where each leap released a fountain of souls. He couldn't see them, but others worthy of Key Lime's graces saw spectacular fireworks of souls jumping out of Jackal, a miracle akin to the splitting out of Key Lime's Spokane. Jackal's ballet released countless tortured souls Key Lime had gathered on his missions. What Jackal saw, heard, smelled, felt, tasted, and telepathized, Key Lime sifted and sought to save, not only trafficked living, but tortured souls of the abused, whose only exit was death by murder or suicide. The released souls had a second chance at life on Earth through Key Lime's miraculous ways. They leapt out of Jackal and onto their new life forms. There is a gap in my memory about where the living tissue came from, but there was an abundance. Over and over, Jackal ran as fast as he could for about 5 meters, then leapt into the air with all his strength. While Jackal was in the air, he spun exactly 360 degrees, and landed directly in the path he'd leapt from. The path was a giant circular one that spanned a large grassy field, in Fjällbacken, under twilight stars, where people were visiting with one another in warm spring. January 28, 2025. One group of people were some 20-something kids drinking beers in the park. They were sitting on a large picnic blanket under a sprawling tree. One of them was standing up with their back turned to me, but then suddenly turned around and shouted something in Danish at me. I didn't understand him. I walked up to him and asked what he said. I completely forgot what we discussed, but I'm sure it was related to the deep-rooted conspiracy of trafficking and body burning. It's 2 Jim Arisim, Seattle, 2025.